Good morning, sir. Before we get started, what is your name, sir?
Good morning, my name is Marty Solano.
Okay, if you could just hold on for one moment, I believe that the Honorable Mr. Louis Corwinis will be serving as your lead, so just hold on, and he will be with you in just a few seconds, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Board Chairman. Mr. Solano, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Mr. Gillis, I can hear you.
Thank you. Good morning, and can you state full name and ABC number for the record?
My name is Marty Michael Solano, 113422.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-412-8 parole hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. You can see on the video conference screen on the bench, we'll begin on my far right. We have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. We have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. And my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing. I will begin with a summary. Mr. Freddy Solano, ADC member 113422, is 41 years old. The crime of murder in the first degree occurred on or about December 25, 1993. He was approximately 17 years old at the time of the incident offense. He was found guilty by jury trial, and on April 13, 1995, and on May 15, 1995, he was sentenced to 3 concurrent prison terms, 2 15-year counts for aggravated assault, which have since expired, and a 25-year life sentence for the said murder. He appealed this case, but his conviction was affirmed by the Arizona Court of Appeals on December 10, 1996. Note, he will be eligible for parole effective December 26, 2018. There was reference in his pre-sentence report to prior weapons offenses, but I'm assuming these were as a juvenile. And I'll ask you right now, Mr. Solano, did you have a prior juvenile charges?
Yes, sir. Mr. Jones, when I was, I think it was 13, at the age of 13 or 14, my freshman year, I brought a 22 Derringer pistol to Mountain Point High School, and I was, I don't know the word for it now, but they kicked me out. I wasn't allowed to go into any state public schools in the state of Arizona. And then 2 years later, I was pulled over with friends of mine on Central Avenue, and I told the officer that I had a 25 Raven in my possession, and I handed it over to him. And that's the other charge.
Well, thank you for being so detailed in explaining that charge to us. There was only reference to it in the pre-sentence report, but no details. Thank you. Again, as I was stating in the summary, you will not be technically eligible for parole until December 26, 2018. I will now read a summary of the offense in question. On December 25th, 1993, Mr. Solano murdered Jennifer Guzman at approximately 11:45 p.m. that night. Mr. Solano was driving a vehicle with 5 passengers, and the victim was driving another vehicle with 2 passengers. Mr. Solano pointed a gun at the victim and told her to give up her car. The victim quickly drove off, and Mr. Solano followed her. During the pursuit, the victim lost control of her vehicle and crashed. Mr. Solano drove to a vehicle and fired one shot into the passenger compartment which struck Ms. Guzman in the head. She was taken to a hospital where she died the next day. According to the occupants of Mr. Solano's car, Mr. Solano wanted to steal the car, the victim's car, which he thought belonged to a rival gang member, so that he could take the rims. And again, that's only a short summary of the offense, so we'll ask you in a few moments to describe the case to us. According to Mr. Solano's institutional progress report, he has had considerable programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections, and he has diligently pursued higher education. He has a release plan that includes living with his mother, pursuing work in construction or HVAC, support from his family, and personal counseling to adjust to life outside of prison. He has had limited discipline in the Department of Corrections from 1996 to 2014, with his last major close to 4 years ago on October 22nd, 2014, for disorderly conduct. This is his first hearing before the board. We have many letters of support in his case file and a detailed packet submitted by Mr. Solano. Also note that we have letters from victims' representatives, and I believe that we have individuals in the room who will be speaking to the board today. We also have a letter dated August 2nd, 2018 from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office opposing parole. Mr. Solano, this is our first opportunity for the board to get to know you. Please tell us about your offense that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you are deserving of supervised release. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Jonas. I would like to thank you all for hearing me today, for seeing me this year. It's a crime that happened close to 25 years ago, 24 and a half years ago. It started off just like a regular day. I was working, I was doing good, I was getting along with my family. None of this was planned, and I was just happy. I just wanted to go home with my friends. So I went to Tempe, picked up a few of my buddies, where one of them approached me and explained to me that members from the rival gang had assaulted him. And I knew in my heart this was going to be a problem because he was on to me all night about it. But I picked up a few other guys, my cousin included, and we just went out for a good time, like teenagers do. We just wanted to go pick up some girls and just go through Central, and we really had no intentions of getting into any trouble. Now, we did have a firearm on us. My friend Eric Guzman, he had some type of broken 380 pistol that he asked me if we should bring it along just in case, because we would be in South Phoenix. And I told him, yeah. I said, put it in the car, just in the off chance something happens, we can just point it up, pull it out, and maybe scare them off, and we can get away. So the firearm was in the vehicle. And we went to Central Avenue, and we were just cruising around and just having a good time. And that's where Robert Navarez spotted Jennifer and her cousin's car with the two sisters, Ursula and Norma. The robber just got pretty excited and started putting a bunch of ideas in our head. And I didn't know how to quiet him or to settle him down. He was pretty still upset. And then we watched the girls just pass by us. We didn't pursue them or nothing. They went their own way. And we just continued down Central Avenue. And it was later that night that somehow they ended up in front of us to go announce we're southbound down Central Avenue headed towards baseline. And they probably had the same idea we had about using baseline to turn around. They had boarded up Central. And they were maybe a few cars ahead of us, and that's where Robert spotted them again. And the guy got pretty excited, pretty pumped up. And that's when I made the decision, all right, let's see if he's in the car. And we'll see if, we'll see if he's in the car. We'll pull up to them and do whatever we have to do. You know, but we had no intentions of hurting the girls. Eric spotted the driver as a schoolmate at Marcus Teniza. So he knew right off the bat who they right away who they were. I had the gun. You know, the guys wanted it, but I didn't give it to them. And I told the girls to pull over. And then somebody in their car, one of the sisters must have told Jennifer to take off, because that's what I thought I heard, and they took off. And just to show up, I just hit the gas, and I was just pursuing them. You know, but their car was, Jennifer was driving at a pretty fast speed. She accelerated through the intersection. I was at distance behind her, but we were close enough to where I could see that she lost control of her vehicle and that Jesse Owens turned. And we didn't know what happened, why they crashed. I was ready to pull off. And it was a pretty bad wreck. It was pretty bad. She lost control and slid the side of the car off on a fire hydrant. My car at the time, I really did not pull over. I didn't have brakes on the car. I was using the emergency brakes to slow it down. And as we were driving by, I still had the gun. And I fired the weapon in the direction of the vehicle. But I wasn't aiming at the girls. I just was showing off to the guys. You know, I didn't think anybody was hit, but to be honest with you, as I was driving away, I knew something was wrong. I felt it in my gut. I knew it was a pretty bad accident, and I knew at that point it was pretty bad. And we drove away, and we went back to another relative's house, and. Or it was a friend's house, and a cousin of mine came up to us. He had just returned from Central Avenue, and he told me that something bad had happened, that Central was closed down, and that there were police everywhere. But I had a big problem. I had to get my guys back to Tempe, so I had to cross through. And that's where I had an encounter with the police officers. They drove me to this... They drove me to the scene, and Detective Mills of the Phoenix Police Department asked me if I knew anything about this car crash. And I told him no, and I was released. But they didn't tell me that there was somebody shot, and I was not aware that somebody was shot until I was in the holding interview room with two detectives, and they had told me they had already spoken to passengers in my car. And it was the next morning when I was in Mesa detention that I spoke to my lawyer, Sarah Cooper, and she told me that Jennifer was in the hospital, that she was shot, and she was on life support. And it was a couple hours later that she told me she passed away, and that's pretty much when I knew my life was over, and her life too. And it was later on that I discovered all the other details about it, that she had a 2-year-old son, and I did something pretty damn horrible. Excuse my language, sir. And I've lived with this ever since. That's what happened, sir, Mr. Jones.
Well, thank you, Mr. Solano. And I do want to commend you for giving such a detailed account. I want to ask you a few questions, and again, this is a parole hearing, this is not a court trial, but you mentioned someone getting excited in the vehicle. Were you driving and someone else was excited, or how did that work out again?
I was driving, and the passengers, my cousin, my friends, once they saw the vehicle, they were excited for, they wanted to retaliate against the Guzmans.
You are being open about gang affiliation, so what gang were you associated with, and what was the rival gang, or who was the rival gang?
I was formerly a member of the Southside Blood Gang, and we were from South Phoenix, and the rival gang was the Guadalupe local gang in the city of Guadalupe, right outside of Tempe.
Thank you, sir. Later in your account, you spoke of discharging your firearm. I'm not so sure as to why you shot. I know you said you spoke a little of your state of mind at that time. Am I correct that you said you were trying to impress your friends? Well, I don't understand why you took that shot.
Well, sir, Mr. Jonas, I'll explain it the best that I can. Robert Navarez was somebody that kind of came around because of me. He was somebody, one of my friends. And I was in an awkward position that he kind of looked to me to kind of fix this situation for him between the rival gang, the rival gang, and after what had happened to him. I didn't want to shoot the gun. I didn't know what else to do. Everything just went crazy, went bad, and I just fired it more out of frustration or showing off, just trying to prove a point that I wanted. My point was to try to get the BGL gang to leave my friend alone. And that's the summary of it. I was just trying to get them to leave him alone.
Okay, and at that point, were you aware that there were nothing but females in the vehicle and that none of them were members of the BGL?
At that point, yes, sir. The first time we came in contact with the vehicle, we had assumed that a cousin of ours, a rival gang member, was inside the vehicles. We assumed that because one of the passengers looked like he had a shaved head. So we thought once we came up on the car the second time, we realized there was nobody in the car.
Okay, sir. And yeah. It was certainly your right to pursue a jury trial and later appeal the case. So at that time, were you in denial that you committed this murder?
I'm responsible for Jennifer Guzman's death. I'm no killer, sir. I was not trying to wound the girls or hurt or Jennifer. But she died because of my actions, and that's what I take responsibility for, and that's what I want. That's what I would like you honorable board members, the people in attendance, the audience, that I am not a killer and I had no intention of hurting anyone.
Well, thank you, Mr. Solano. Pardon me, I didn't mean to speak over you. I guess what I meant is, when you were young, when this crime happened, were you in denial that you committed a murder and perhaps along the way came to grips with what you've done, or what were you at that time in your mind?
No, sir, I knew I committed a murder. The time of frame I was, it's almost as curious, it's hard to put it in context for you. The feeling you have when you know you've taken someone's life, and you know your life is over, and you know all the lives you've destroyed. I can't put that feeling, that big hole in your heart for you so you understand what this is like. But I knew exactly what I had done, and I guess I knew I committed murder.
Well, pardon me, Mr. Serrano, because this is the first time you've appeared before the board, and I'm taking a few notes here just to get an understanding of the case. So I'll ask some other questions about your development since you've been inside the Department of Corrections. It looks like that you, as I stated in the summary, have had a lot of programming, and am I correct that you pursued higher education since you've been inside the Department of Corrections?
Yes, sir. I've had the unique opportunity to be allowed to work in areas where higher learning was available. So I was able to work as a clerk for the carpentry WBE for many years, where I was able to get real salado work, go to school for real salado, learn how to do carpentry, build furniture. Anytime there was an opportunity to take a WBE course or to receive college programming, I pursued it from King College, Rio, Salado College, courses offered through the University of Arizona, and Eastern Arizona College. I enjoy learning. I'm not the greatest student. I'm a C+, B- at best, but I try my hardest.
Thank you, sir. And again, am I correct, you pursued an associate's degree in general studies?
Yes, sir, in technical studies.
And did you receive any income while you were inside the Department of Corrections? I recognize that some inmates are involved in programs where they actually earn money.
No, sir. In my situation, I'm not privileged to work for ACIs, just WBE, so I received the standard inmate payment.
Are you responsible for any restitution associated with this crime?
Not that I'm aware of, no, sir.
Thank you. You had some discipline in the Department of Corrections. It was limited, but I will say that your last major was close to 4 years ago. Can you tell us about that ticket?
Yes, it was kind of, the only way I can explain it is I screwed up. It had to do with commissary. I'm not sure if you understand how our commissary system works. It was a hot day. Guys were all standing outside for many hours, and we were all just waiting for our commissary. And we were having an issue with young guys cutting in front of the line, moving people's IDs, taking advantage of some of the older guys that really wouldn't speak up for themselves. I put my ID on a fence, which is the procedure at the Eloy, at the unit in Eloy, where I was at Red Rock. And there were rows of IDs, and they were moving the IDs in front of the other trying to get in so they can get their commissary first. They won't have to stand outside of mine. I put my idea up. I went and worked out, and I came back, and I noticed there were two older guys that had been standing in line for a long time, and they still hadn't gotten their stuff. And one of them approached me and told me what was going on. His name was Vinny, and he doesn't have nothing. He has nobody. He gets one bag of coffee and two rolls of toilet paper, maybe a pouch of tobacco. And I grabbed my buddy's crutch, and I used his crutch, and I knocked the IDs off the fence. And I told all the guys on the yard that they need to quit doing that. That they need to quit cutting the line and being bullies and taking advantage of people. And I thought the crutch was a little bit tougher than that, but the crutch wasn't really as strong as I thought, and it broke. And the officer who had seen the incident, he put me on a report for disorderly conduct. And I pled guilty to it.
Thank you.
That's what happened, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Solano. I did review a pretty lengthy parole packet. I will just ask you, in general, because with respect to you, your discipline was limited, but it would seem that early in your sentence, you had a major for assault with a weapon. Disobeying an order at 99, a positive or refusal to submit to your analysis in 2011, and then this last disorderly conduct in 2014. So when you first entered the prison system, were you in a different mindset, especially with your first major being for assault? What was your situation at that time?
Well, I was, for the assault, I've only been for one fight. It was a fight on the basketball court, and we were just playing basketball, and the guy I got into a fight with was, his name was Tony Luzinia, and we were actually pretty good friends afterwards and before that, and we were just playing sports, and things happened. But we did duke it out, and we got in trouble. And before that, I had some majors, you know, I had a bad attitude as far as, I was on a top bunk, and I was living on a bottom bunk, and a female officer told me to move back to the top, and I really didn't want to, and she threatened to write me up, and I told her, "You can write me up to your boot in the face, I'm not moving to the top bunk." And what she did, she wrote me up three times one night, and I ended up on the top bunk. And later on, I was smoking weed on the basketball court, and they UA'd everyone that came off the court. So I got a refusal for UA, sir.
You stated that you were smoking weed. Were you involved in drugs throughout your time in the Department of Corrections, or can you talk about that?
No, sir. It was just earlier on, I hadn't really had anything accomplished yet, but I have had off and on bouts with depression and drugs, and between 2009 and 2011, I really lost my way. But I got it together, picked myself up, and got back on track. And before that, I had years of programming and education.
Did you get involved with drugs harder than marijuana?
Yes, sir.
We recognize that drugs are available inside the Department of Corrections, unfortunately. It's a tragedy that it continues to be a problem. But what else did you get involved with?
Methadone, heroin. I was doing pretty bad. You know, once you get with that stuff, it's pretty hard to beat. And my mentality was pretty, I'd pretty much given up with everything going on. I just lost my way.
I would ask you in general terms, in the interest of security, I won't ask for specifics, but did you get involved in prison politics at all in these last 25 years?
No, sir. I've never been involved in any prison politics.
I appreciate your response. Thank you. Mr. Serrano, I've asked a few questions here. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions at this point. I'll be going to find Ms. Whitmore.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Mr. Serrano, the record reflects that you took you participated in a victim impact panel?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that correct? Could you tell us what that experience was like for you?
Well, we watched videos of people who were victims of various crimes, and they spoke about how the crimes themselves affected their personal lives and how they were able to cope and move on. And it makes you think about the things that you do with your people, what they have to go through themselves to get to rebuild. They almost have to go through some type of rehabilitation to be vulnerable again.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Yes, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Solano, I'm going to go back to the night the crime occurred. It happened on Christmas Day, which seems to me like an unlikely time to go out looking for trouble, which sounds like what you were doing, because somebody, whether it be you or somebody else, according to your statement, somebody else had the gun and said, "Should I bring it?" And you said, "Yeah." So you were anticipating trouble, or you were looking for it, one of the two. But you say that you saw a car and you thought it belonged to somebody in a rival gang, so the whole incident was gang-related. But when the girls, when they fled, and you chased them into a crash, why would you point the gun at the car at all, let alone pull the trigger? What prompted that? Why would you do that to somebody that's just had, in your own words, a very bad wreck? Why would you shoot at?
Well, sir, I was in a game from South Phoenix, and at any time, you don't know who could be firing at you if they have a weapon. I was more or less just defending myself.
Well, then nobody shot at you. Nobody threw anything at you. Nobody did anything aggressive toward you. So you weren't defending yourself. You were just trying to prove to all your friends what a big guy you are, and, you know, and that's part of the gang culture. And it cost a young lady her life, and it cost you your life. But that's what I don't understand is, you know, I was in the military and I was in law enforcement, and I never just shot because I thought somebody might take a shot at me. The reasoning just doesn't add, the reasoning to me doesn't add up.
I shot at innocent people. That's what.
Okay, well, you said a friend brought the gun along, and then why did you take control of it instead of letting your friend have it, if he brought it?
Because I didn't want them to shoot anybody.
Okay, so?
One of them was my cousin, and I wasn't going to let my cousin shoot anybody.
Okay, I will say this after, you know, I know that was a little harsh, but, and I would commend you for what you've done since you've been incarcerated, your education and staying out of trouble pretty much, and apparently overcoming a drug problem that, you know, that arose when you went into prison, and we perfectly well understand the difficulty that can cause somebody. So I do want to commend you for what you have accomplished since you've been in.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Canomas.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Any further questions from fellow board members? Just double checking. Okay, Mr. Solano, at this point, we recognize that you have several supporters in the room, and we have an order to these hearings or at the quorum. We begin with your supporters, and then we ask if there are any victim representatives in the room. So we'll begin with your supporters. We will speak to you, the victim's representatives, and then we will come back to you to summarize and ask if you have a final statement. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. At this point, I will ask if there is anyone leading for Mr. Solano, who would like to begin first. And I'll ask this too. I recognize that we have many people that have signed in this morning, but if I have, may I see a show of hands of how many people will be speaking on behalf of Mr. Solano today? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, is it 5? Does that seem correct? And I will ask you, because there's a fair number of people, certainly I'm not going to cut off anybody from speaking. This is Mr. Solano's right to this hearing. But I will ask that you manage your time, because we do have one of them hearing today, and we also want to give the victims' representatives an equal opportunity to speak before this board. So if, ma'am, if you want to approach the podium. And the pattern will be obvious after this. I'll ask you to state your name for the record, and then share with us what you'd like with the board today.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm Yolanda Fulber. I'm Freddie's mother. Raised him as a single mother. And so when he was young, he got involved with the wrong people. I had to work 2 jobs, and I wasn't there for him. And but also I want to say I'm very, very sorry to the family, to Jennifer and her family. I'm very, very sorry for their loss. And but I'm very proud of Freddie for what he's accomplished, what he's been. He's become a different person. You know, he was, when he was a teenager, he was, you know, with his friends and all that, and I worried a lot about what would happen to him. And since he's been a president, I've tried to be so, and my family, I've tried to be real supportive of him and help him to find his way and encourage him in his work and his paintings. And and he also has a job waiting for him when he comes out, which I didn't put in the paperwork because I didn't know at the time. But it's with Grand Avenue Produce Company, and they've agreed to hire him as soon as he comes home. So he has a home and he has vehicles for work, and he just wants to make up for this tragedy that happened in all of our lives. And I want to thank you for listening to him and concerning him. That's all.
Thank you, ma'am. I have a question, and I'll be delicate. I certainly am not going to look in the eye and blame you because of the crime that your son committed. I will ask you, though, do you continue to live in an area that's influenced by gangs? Because we do worry.
No, and he has had no connection with any of those people. They've never called me and said, how's Fred doing? How's, you know. So I told him, this is what your friends are, you know. They're your friends until something happens, and then and then they're gone. But he, no, we live in Northwest Phoenix, Glendale area, in a very nice area, in Areas West. It's not a rich neighborhood, but it's not.
Well, I was not in my position to scrutinize. It's, but it would be irresponsible not to ask if should this board see fit to return to the community the sort of influence that he might be exposed to.
Oh, no, no. My husband is a good hard worker. He's been working for the sheet metal union for 40 years. His two sisters are in college, his half-sisters. Everybody's hardworking. It's not that kind of family. I don't even know how he got involved in gangs, because nobody that we ever... You could look my record up. I don't even have a traffic ticket, you know. It's not that kind of family. We're not that kind of family. I worked for the state for 12 years.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, ma'am, and I will just say, in good faith, I didn't grow up in the best neighborhood either, and I see how these stories unfold.
Yeah.
It's a public safety question that I'm asking, and I appreciate your honesty.
I grew up in South Phoenix, too, and I had kids that told me, yeah, let's go to school, but let's go do this, and no, I was afraid to hurt my mom, and I just didn't do it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, ma'am. I'll ask my fellow board members, any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you.
And who would like to come up next? And if you can state your name for the record.
Hey, my name is Elizabeth Fuller.
I'm sorry, can you sit down?
Elizabeth Fuller.
And what would you like to share with the board, ma'am?
Yes, so I'm Brady's sister. I've been visiting in prison since I was born, because I'm only 21, so everything happened before, and I've never known my brother outside. And in my 21 years, he's always been another person. I know that he was a horrible thing, it was a tragedy, but he wouldn't hurt a fly. He's not a danger to society. And I want to talk about our future, so we're going to college together at ASU. I want to get a master's, and he wants to go get a bachelor's in art. We want to, you know, have our families and have our kids grow up together. I never got to grow up with my brother at home. Sorry. But I hope that we have a chance to grow up. I know that he's not great. He hasn't been a healthy man. He hasn't done anything ever since. That's
Thank you. I have a quick question for you too. And sometimes these questions just come to mind, but you're probably a good person to ask. I'm usually not this forthcoming about this. This is not about me, but it's not like I don't have family members who have fallen into bad influence too. So, what sort of influence do you think he's been? To your family or young people since he's been inside?
So since I've been out, he's always encouraged me to be a good student and do good in school and help out our mom. All we worry about is our mom and both of us. He's never, we just worry about her and our family, and he's a super very, family-oriented person. He cares about our grandmothers and our mother and our aunts and uncles, and we're just super family and education. We would be good values and the influence that he's had on me to be a good person. And I want to be a teacher, and I want to work in lower income areas so I can help students so that big children, because there's a school to prison pipeline, and those kids are growing up and thrown into the prison system, and I want to be able to make a difference there. And I think my brother being there, what happened when the tragedy and everything encouraged me to follow that path.
Thank you very much. And again, I would just ask out of curiosity, how far are you into your education?
This is my last semester before student teaching. I'm a senior.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Good for you. Thank you. I'm going to ask my fellow board members any questions for you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
We have five people who want to speak. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Lorraine Maldonado, and I'm Brady's godmother and Thea. I just want to say how sorry we are for the family. I know what it's like to lose somebody, because I lost my son, and I had Freddie to help, you know, ease me. You know, he was like a son. He's been like a son. And I'm so proud of him for what he's accomplished. He's accomplished more than a lot of his cousins and friends out here have. You know, I commend him for that. And it's been rough on his mom and his grandmother, my tia. We just want to move so that he can help. You know, he wants to help us. He wants to support us the way we supported him. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions from the board members? Thank you so much.
Recently, I was the person closest to him. I do 10 years in prison. Been out for 6. I'm not going to go through rehabilitation. I am rehabilitated. I moved away. I found God in prison. I moved to Prescott Valley. There's no question in my mind. It's a tragedy as to what happened. We can't take that back. The biggest question is moving forward. I can tell you this. As I was incarcerated with Freddie, walked side by side, for multiple years, he was always trying to encourage me to go in the right direction, but I had already made up my mind. What I was going to do is not a matter of if I'm going to go back. No, you don't put yourself in those situations, you don't go back. And I can tell you this, moving forward, Freddie has that mindset. Freddie's incarcerated with thousands of people, but I can tell you, he is different from most of the people, and that's the reason he's not going to go back. He has a supporting cast just like I do. My grandmother and his grandmother are sisters. I've been out for 6 years. I have a t-shirt printing business. I'm a warehouse manager of a flooring store. He knows how to make the right choices. Maybe it's so much as a younger adult or a younger child, he did it. And I can tell you, the biggest question moving forward is what's gonna happen? Is he in danger? No, he's not. And I can tell you that confidently because I know how I am and I know how he is. Like I said, we were on the same yard for several years. And there's no question in my mind as to, despite emotions, we, for us, as well as for the victims, as well as for him, waiting for this day in anticipation of 25 years, do you say the right things? Do you say the wrong things? I can tell you today that moving forward, there's not a question as to, is he a danger? Is he a threat? No, he's not. Freddie's mindset is completely different from what it was just a decade ago. And I can tell you that as this progression has happened, adults learn things, and as this time has happened over the course of 25 years, he's been able to learn how to become an adult, prepare himself for the day when he's released. And that's what it is. It's a learning curve. None of us have the right answers. He didn't have them 25 years ago, but I know him. It's not like people, you know, to criticize anyone, but it's nobody looking at something saying, hey, is this what, let's figure out and let's take this chance. I can tell you confidently there is no chance just because of how I've seen him mature and grow over the years, and I've kept in contact with him over the last, I've been out for 6 years. I learned that I had to take a chance in working. I started at the bottom, now I make better money, and I've learned trades, and the same way he's tried to influence me, I've learned how to become, I'm currently waiting for my fingerprint card to become the social film. I've volunteered at the Yavapai Juvenile Detention Facility. I've worked with Special Olympics. I've done several things, and it takes steps. Is he gonna have the best step out? Yeah, because he has a supporting cast that's gonna help him make those right decisions. There is nobody around him to make the bad decisions. One of the reasons I learned how to separate myself, I moved 100 miles away. And I believe that with the parameter of people that are around him, he's gonna make the right decisions.
Thank you, sir. I'll begin by saying that I work very hard to treat everybody who appears before this board with respect. And this hearing, of course, is about Mr. Solano. But I will ask you, because it seems like you've done a very good job in returning to the community, being productive, being a responsible individual. I commend you for that. How old were you when you were in DOC?
I was 21 years old when I and I was released in 2012.
Well, again, I commend you for your journey.
Thank you.
I'll ask my fellow board members any questions. Thank you for being before the board, sir. You're welcome.
And I just want to say that Freddie has always been my favorite nephew. Even now, he sends me cards on my birthday, Christmas. And I haven't been able to go visit him because I have bad rheumatoid arthritis and fibromyalgia. But I miss him very much. And that's why when I come up with that novel, I'll start crying. But he's always been a good kid when he was young and respectable and funny. And when that happened, it was such a tragedy. And we couldn't believe it happened because he was always such a good kid. But now he's changed a lot. He used to be funny and all that. Now he looks sad because he's locked up, and I know he deserves to come out because he worked very hard to be better. And that's all I want to say, that I miss him very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions? Hold on one second. Any questions from fellow board members? Thank you so much, ma'am. Before we move on to victims' representatives, I will ask again, is there anyone else who wants to speak on behalf of Mr. Solano? Thank you very much. If you will approach. And if you can state your name for the record.
Jesse Amaro.
Thank you.
I am Jennifer Guzman's mother. I just want to read my letter. The reason for this letter is because I don't think Mr. Solano should be released from prison. This man committed murder. He killed my daughter. She didn't have a chance in life. This horrible man took my daughter's life. He took her from us at an early age. Although she was a young mother, she was my daughter, and she was a sister. And as a mother, she had a two-year-old son that I had to help raise with his father. And yes, my grandson is 27 years old now. He's a grown man. He's a beautiful person. He's a humble person. He has his own children. His mother never got to see him getting married. She didn't get to see her grandchildren being born. She has missed all the holidays and special occasions and parties for my grandkids. All this has been hard on him. As he was little, I had to deal with him when he would ask me about his mother. At night, when he would cry, I had to be there for him. I had to explain to him that his mother was in heaven. There was times he would ask me, can you go to heaven? How can you explain to a two-year-old that you cannot go to heaven to visit his mother? I suffered a lot from depression and panic attacks. And for many years, I was on medication. Not a day goes by that I don't think about her. She was my only daughter. I only had two kids. It was her and my son. I was not able to celebrate her birthdays or Christmas. Is very hard on me, especially that day. Because like normal people, I wish I could celebrate Christmas. But you know, I keep it to myself and I hold in a tear because I don't have to put a happy smile on my face for my grandkids and my children, my son, my grandson. Yeah, I'm always, those holidays are hard for me. I believe he should stay in prison for the rest of his life. His family, his parents, still have him alive. They get to go visit him, hug him, do food visits with him. And I don't. I go to the cemetery. I talk to a slab of cement. I clean her graveyard, her gravesite. I lay flowers at the gravesite. I sit for a while. Then I leave with my little bucket of cleaning supplies. But as I am walking away, I'm sobbing. I get in my car and I sob as much as I can. Then I compose myself. Then I just go home. This was really devastating for me. There have been other criminals going to serve prison or going to serve life in prison for raping or selling drugs. Why should he get his freedom? He took a life. I also have heard of them and saying that they have changed, that they have been rehabilitated, when in fact they come out and do the same thing. I feel he's a danger to society. He had been on probation prior to the murder of my daughter, and he went out and committed a heinous crime of murder of my child. He had a chance to let my daughter go without hurting her, but instead he shot her and killed her without no regards to her life or who he was hurting or who was going to get hurt. Then he goes out in parties with his friends like nothing. Did he call the police or call an ambulance for them to come and help my daughter? She had already wrecked her car. So if he was trying to take her rims, you know, okay, then he saw her car was wrecked, the rims are all messed up, but he still shot at her and killed her. He pulled that trigger. He, in reading the papers, the interrogations, his own cousin, Jimmy, had told him to let the girls go, but no, he didn't let them go. He just shot her. Yes, and yet my daughter did lose control of that car because they were chasing him, her, and they were shooting at her. And she was going at a high rate of speed to try and get away. She was in fear for her life, along with my cousins. There were two girls in the car, which were my cousins. So as Jennifer's mother, I am pleading to you on the clemency board to please do not release him. Justice has not been served on the murder of my daughter, Jennifer. I know you all have children, and I know you guys pray for them to be home safe at night. And I feel of a person like that, or people like him, you know, you just hope for the best for your children. I feel that, yes, he has done a lot in prison, maybe, educate himself or anything like that, but he had 25 years with nothing to do. He took advantage of that and just did whatever he could, and they're just to pass the time. But I'm the one that's suffering. You know, I don't have my daughter, and that is not fair, that he gets to come out and go on with his life like nothing, and I have to suffer. You know, when he shot at her, he had already had two previous offenses with guns, and then he goes and kills someone. What else is he going to do when he gets out? This is all I have to say. Thank you for hearing me out.
Thank you, ma'am. I'll ask my fellow board members if they have any questions. Thank you for appearing before this board today.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jessica Garza. I am here on behalf of my husband, Ernest Guzman. That is Jennifer Guzman's brother. I am going to read the letter that he sent for you, for the board.
Thank you.
And I will go from there. It's okay. Dear members of the board, my name is Ernest Guzman. And I am writing this on behalf of my sister, Jennifer Lee Guzman, who cannot be here because her life was taken from us at such an early age. sister was a great, loving, and giving person. She was always happy and had such a beautiful smile. She loved her family. She loved her family and looked forward to a bright future. I still remember. I still remember. I'm sorry. Went forward to graduating and going to college. But it all stopped when this coward put a bullet into her head. Even after his so-called friends told him that there is nothing but walls in the car, he made her back, passing away. He threatened to put her next to him, noticing they were not unconscious. He still shot shoes into the car. He still shoots into the car. He made her wreck passing by him. Sorry, you can see too, okay? Hitting his sister in the back of the head. All was happy on Christmas Day at that. She died 2 days later. He had a choice, like reality. You can only make a good decision or a bad decision. There's consequences to everything we do in life. That's just life, right? But still, he went ahead and made a great moment of a whole group of friends to prove a point. Well, what kind of point is it proving now? He's a Christian. 25 years, and he wants to come home and live his life with his sister and his mother. And his family, the same way Jennifer would reach out to me too. She had no choice. He's still living, he's still breathing, he still gets Christmas, he still gets a year for his birthday every time he comes. But Jennifer doesn't. If he had a choice for action, shoot. He could have let them be. He could have let them be knowing that they were passed on or nothing. But this guy doesn't think that you're not a person and probably the other one. As much as he says he regrets what he did or how much education he got while incarcerated, he will not think like a normal person. Don't let him fool anybody by you saying that he's behind you because it shows that he was not. Especially that he got the violation or drugs and other numerous violations. This time we have changed and it shows. Our family, especially my mother and I, have always discussed that as long as my sister cannot be out here to be with her family, to enjoy her children, grandchildren, he doesn't deserve to be out here. As well, if my sister cannot come home, neither should he. If we cannot enjoy her home, his family shouldn't be able to enjoy his home coming. I do not want for him to do what he did to my sister to everyone else. I have spoken to numerous ex-friends of mine, of his, and they all tell me the same thing, that he doesn't seem to be all there. In the morning, so if you decide to release him now or in the future, his cards will be in those hands that he wants to. What our entire family has decided on to not convince the world not to release him. He should not be out here to enjoy his. Yeah. since the end of Reyes Junior's prison. And then I'm going to stay in the room, and everything is in the system. I was 15 years 16, my husband was 17. I went to him, and I told him, if I do have a good idea, it's happening. I'm in the room ever since day one. She was pregnant, she was married, but they were living, loving. Nobody knows nobody. You know, she was at the wrong place at the wrong time, yes. And I can remember from the beginning, he was in with his education, and everything he chose to do. Again, I mean, if he didn't, if he didn't do this, he would have been living with his business as a woman. He wasn't there, but what did he want to do? Why would he do this anyway? Tell me about him, I live in the sun, and he would have been a friend of yours, so I think he was in the room. You might have been the best, right? I have my associates in my criminal justice. My father was taken when I was 2 years old as well. He was shot by a gun in 1982. The man who did it got 8 years in prison and was released. And was killed by my father. I am still remembering in Alex, which is her son. And if I was able to know who this man was and where he was, I would hope that he's doing the best that he could as a patron and the best that he could as well. I would hope that she was able to assist the children as well as the rest of us. And I just wish her luck. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I just wanted to add, because I stated earlier that I work very hard to treat everybody for this board with respect. This is not to say that that's approval of Mr. Solano's actions by any shape of the imagination. And it's very meaningful when victims testify before this board, and I think you testify with great dignity. So I want to thank you personally.
Thank you. He was in the greatest city.
Okay, Mr. Solano, we're getting very close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. But this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before we go into discussion?
Thank you again for all hearing me today. I'd like to ask you to take deep consideration into what the Guzman family had to say. They have a right to say everything. And my family as well, their victims as well. I feel resolved that there's a chance I could die in prison, be here for the rest of my life. I'm fully prepared to be I'm fully prepared for that. I just don't want anybody to suffer for this anymore. You know, I'll be as brave as I can. I live with what I did. I live with Jennifer's life every day. I don't know how I reason with it. I try to find answers. I don't have them. I don't. And I don't know how to give peace to people. All the thing I can do is I just hope that God gives me a chance that I can help somebody and make this do something right. I know I'm never going to be a successful or anything like that. But this has been hard for everybody, and I live with a lot. give my peace, all the Muslims have peace. If I had to die in prison to give that to them, then I'd do it. I commit a coward's crime, but I'm no coward. I will face my death, my life in prison as best as I can. And I keep working hard, and I just live each day like I have been. But thank you, for hearing me, and for everyone that supported me, and for the Guzmans for being brave and telling me the truth, telling us the truth how they feel. I certainly deserve to hear it. That's why I said these feelings.
Thank you, Mr. Solano. The board will be going into discussion. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just remain on the phone, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. And you reminded, because this is the first time you've been before this board, we do not discuss these cases before we come into the hearing room. We're individual, independent voting members. So we'll be having a discussion, and again, we'll come back to you shortly. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Solano. The board is now on discussion. Fellow board members, I'll begin by saying that there's something for me particularly hard about deliberating over a parole decision over an individual who committed a capital crime under the age of 18 and has certainly shown personal development inside the Department of Corrections. I do believe that Mr. Solano has been on an odyssey of rehabilitation and redemption. He certainly has tremendous support from his family, which I admire and respect. But we're also confronted with victims who have been traumatized by a miscrime, a senseless crime. They will have to live with this for the rest of their lives. And I think that loss will always be there. We are asked by the people of Arizona to make fair decisions. And where I'll begin the discussion is Mr. Solano is a young man. He has had discipline inside the Department of Corrections through 2014, which is still fairly recent. I do appreciate his accounting for that. Had some issues inside the Department of Corrections with drugs, which he states he's dealt with, but it is an indication that he did get lost along the way and has been trying to find his way forward. With respect to the concerns of the victims' representatives, I am not ready to recommend parole or home arrest, but that's where I'll begin the discussion, and I certainly look forward to the input of my colleagues. Yes, sir, Ms. Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. I'm of the same mind. I was particularly compelling for me is that the victim left a 2-year-old son. And he used the word senseless. It really was senseless. I can't get past the shooting at a car that's been in an accident, and people are obviously not a threat to, you know, to him at that point. They were not a threat at all to him, so I think I'm of the same mind, so thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Yes, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, sir. I'm of that mindset also, going back to the original crime, and just, it seems like they were not looking for trouble on Christmas Day unless, and there's two main things again. I'm taking the back car because we want to do what we think it might belong to a rival gang member who's right there. Sets off all the alarms. But then to point gun at the chasing into a wreck and then shooting at the car, turning around and coming out and shooting at the car. Senseless doesn't come close to describing that. So at this time, I'm not in favor of any type of release or after you discharge yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Any further? But yes, Mr. Johnson.
I do understand. These were just some, they were young when this incident occurred. I do believe that a person can be rehabilitated from the crimes that they committed and what has happened to them in their life. It's a both tragic event for both sides of the family, both the victim's family as well as the family of Mr. Solano. But I am concerned about he has not had as many, really I would consider minimal tickets for the time that he's been incarcerated for 25 years with the amount of tickets that he has. Does have a minimal amount of tickets that he's had, but you know, this one in 2014 is of concern that he did do that. It was a senseless crime, and you know, I haven't heard him at any point not take responsibility for the crime that he committed, to not make any excuse for the crime that he committed, that it was a senseless crime and something that shouldn't have happened, that he took the lives of an innocent person who had nothing to do with what they were doing. They were out, they got caught up in a situation. He was bothering a gang, and what I hear him saying, even from the beginning, he was always trying to be protective of his family. The reason he said he took the gun was because he didn't want his cousin to actually shoot anybody or get involved. So he's been protective of his family. He's made a very horrible decision that has impacted the lives, as he's also admitted it impacted the lives of the victim's family as well as his family that it caused. But I think a person can be rehabilitated. He's gone. Got his GED, he's gone to, and done some college courses, and he's continued to do some things while he's been incarcerated. However, I'm still not at this point willing to release him out on home arrest, absolute discharge, or a regular parole, and that's because a lot has to do with this 2014 issue. That he has. I'd like to see him, and I do understand, I think the gentleman who testified, I think it was Mr. Montez, you know, testified and having been incarcerated before for 10 years, you know, that he didn't think that he would be a threat to society. However, you know that after 25 years coming out would be definitely a hindrance, although there's still strong family support. I would like to see some more things taking place prior, and maybe some more classes that he can take while he's incarcerated in prison. And certainly I do understand the loss of the family and the victim's mother, who's also gone through a lot to do it. But at this point in time, because of the past history, I'm not in favor of granting the home arrest, absolute discharge and written parole, but I do want to, you know, state on the record that I do think that you've made some tremendous progress and that a person can be rehabilitated and do positive things once they're released, if they're rehabilitated from prison.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Dr. Wright.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Mr. Wallace, I think that one of the things that we always have to think about and that I must think about is what is in the best interest of the citizens of Arizona. And I think that my distinguished colleagues have summed that up quite well. It is not at this particular time in the best interest of the citizens of Arizona to release them back out in the community. I think in addition to that ticket in 2014, I'm also concerned about the ticket that was in, I believe it was 2011, the drugs, marijuana. He admits that he was using marijuana, and that was just 2011. That's not that long ago, and it may seem like a long time, but for him to be using illegal substances while incarcerated, and knowing that eventually he was going to come before this board, it just does not make too much sense. But I think at this time, what is in the best interest of the state, the citizens of the state of Arizona, is for him to remain in custody, and we'll see what happens in the future. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Board Chairman Dr. Ray. Before I make a motion, I will follow by saying, as I stated at the beginning, that Mr. Solano was 17 years old when this crime happened. I want to echo Mr. Johnson. I believe that rehabilitation is possible, maybe not for everyone, but it's certainly possible, and I've seen some very outstanding success stories along the way. And I do commend Mr. Solano for his personal development. But again, I do not believe that he is a good candidate for general parole or arrest, let alone absolute discharge at this point of his development. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion. And that motion is to deny or deferral absolute discharge or home arrest. And based on the year of the crime in question, I'm asking for a 1 year set off.
Second.
Agreed.
Seconded by Mr. Neal. Agreed upon, and I'll just say, state of the order of our listing, the Honorable Dr. Wright, Mr. Johnson, and Ms. Rittenhouse. Again, I ask for 1 year set off. Release type denied is, again, a regular parole absolute discharge or home arrest. And my reasons for denial are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, and I will state that because this involved shooting at a vehicle of innocence after an accident, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, as they were young, serious bodily injury. I will ask for input on this one based on the accident, but does the board perceive this as multiple victims?
Yeah, it was.
Yes. Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm not overstepping. I know there's reference to perhaps some probation status as a juvenile. I didn't find anything in our case file. I can say that with faith. Continued substance abuse. There's a history of assaultive behavior. This history was, he had no prior felony convictions as an adult. Or institutional behavior, recent disciplinary infraction in as much that it was within the last 5 years, history of assaultive behavior, and is there anything else that any fellow board member wishes to add? Okay, Mr. Solano, the board has made its decision to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. Did you hear reasons for denial?
No, sir, I understand your reasons.
Well, we do appreciate you appearing for the board today. You've been very pleasant and articulate before this board. I personally appreciate your accountability, and I wish you the best in your continuing development, pardon me, inside the Department of Corrections. So please continue to be safe inside the prison system, and I will bring this hearing to a close. Thank you, sir.